I remember that my Guru Maharaj would often send young boys out to sell literature of Krishna consciousness. And if they would come back after having sold only a few issues, Guru Maharaj was very, very pleased. Now you report that you have sold 300 issues of Back to Godhead in just a few days. So I know that Guru Maharaj is very, very pleased with your work. Actually, in all of our centers, our Sankirtan party in Krishna conscious literature is becoming more and more popular. Perhaps you have heard that Brahmananda has already made arrangements to increase the number of copies printed from 20,000 to 25,000. To This is all very encouraging to continue to increase your sales of back to Godhead as far as possible. You are a serious worker and Krishna will reward your efforts with success. So we know that the heart and soul of Srila Prabhupada's movement was book distribution. He put a lot of emphasis on that more than anything, even over temple worship. He says, our books are the basis, preaching is the essence, purity is the force, and utility is the principle. The basis of our Krishna conscious movement is our literature, this transcendental literature, which is coming from the pure acharyas, ultimately coming from the Lord himself. In 1936, Srila Prabhupada was given the instructions by his spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He said, Arun Jwable. You know Bengali? Arun Jwable. Arun Jwable, isn't it? Fire. There is fire in the mat. How do you say? Arun Dwable, is it? No. And he said, not done. He said, J-V-A-L-B-E. He said, the devotees had gotten one new building in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta. And everyone was fighting, this is my room, this is my room, this is my room. Yeah, Arun Jalbe. Yeah. Did I say it right? Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. Next life I'll be born a Bengali, then I will get it properly. So this life I'm still suffering from my malecha tendencies. Well, Jalbe. Huh? Yeah. In yoga, near Yoga Pit. So he said, there is fighting. Devotees are fighting, and this is my room, this is my room, this is my room. And they had gotten a big building. Some big man gave donation. Big, big building. So everyone is fighting now. So he was saying, now we should, he said, if I could do it, I would take the marble from the temple and sell it, and I would print books. He says, books are our basis, and therefore you should, if he told Bhakti Vedanta, Abhay, who was just a young man, he was about 40 years old at the time, was in 1936 in Vrindavan. In fact, it was in Radhakund. They were walking along in Radhakund, and he said that. And then he said, if you ever get money, print books. If you ever get money, print books. This is, he said, if someone is hearing their mridanga, they can, mridanga sound is, you can hear for so far. But then there is what is called brihat mridanga. That is the great mridanga. That is our books distribution. That will go everywhere in the world. So we see over the years how Srila Prabhupada emphasized the importance of book distribution in our movement. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, if someone sold just one book, he would say, oh, you're so nice. You're so nice. Krishna is so pleased with you. So we can see that the heart and soul of Srila Prabhupada was just book distribution. He said the communists have become successful in propagating their philosophy because of the distribution of their literature in masses. He said we should do the same thing with our books. So you see, now there's always emphasis on book distribution. And Prabhupada put so much effort in translating Srimad Bhagavatam and in writing various Srila Bhakti Vedanta purports and encouraging devotees to go out and preach. He wanted this book distribution very strongly. But he said, we also, before we can do that, we also should read the books too. He said, if you don't know what's in them, then you can't really distribute them properly. People will ask what is in there, and you cannot say. You say, oh, we don't read, we just distribute it. Our Guru Maharaj, he writes, and we distribute. So we have to read these books. Srila Prabhupada used to say, 1 hour, at least 1 hour a day we should be reading. Sometimes he would say 2 hours, sometimes he would say all day. We should read and study these books. When Maya comes, if you are not fixed in the philosophy, then Maya has got you. If you're strong in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and you to live according to that philosophy, Maya can't touch you. So you have to be very strong in his philosophy, just to understand how Maya is working and how to deal with Maya. So these books are essential. So we should read them. We should also to help distribute them to others in whatever way we can. Tomorrow is Gita Jayanti. It's a day for glorifying the speaking of Bhagavad Gita by Lord Sri Krishna. That's also a great opportunity to distribute Bhagavad Gitas. I remember every year since I've been here, we've always had a big program around Gita Jayanti where we contact the various congregational members and ask them to take consignments of large numbers of Gitas and pay for them or give them out to their friends. This year I don't think we're doing much, but it's a very important festival glorifying the speaking of Bhagavad Gita. So tomorrow everyone should be fired up for Gita Jayanti. People come, we should try to sell them Gitas. Stand by, have a temple, a table there with some Gitas on it, Bengali, Hindi, Gujarati, in English. We have all the Gitas in all four languages. Marathi, we also have it in Marathi. We can stand there and just ask people, today is Gita Jayanti, please buy a Gita. They will buy. If they don't read it, they'll give it to someone who will read it. So these are some ideas. We should be very, we should know that the blessings of the Guru come by serving the Guru. And if, to get Prabhupada's blessings, you can get them in many ways, but if you want special blessings, distribute books. There's blessings and then there's more blessings. Prabhupada is blessing everyone, but special blessings come when we preach and when we distribute Krishna consciousness literature. Okay. One more, we'll read. Two more. Now that our press is ready in Boston, we have become more than 1 dozen books have already been printed. So with your help, I wish to overflood the marketplaces with our literature. Now people are reading all kinds of nonsense books, and thus their reading capacity is helping them to pave their way through the circles of birth and death. If they will simply take to reading this transcendental literature we are presenting, the same reading capacity will elevate them to the highest perfection of spiritual life. So this is a very important task we are doing. And of all you, push forward in Colorado with increased enthusiasm. That's to Harinam. This is to Brahmananda. We shall overflood the market with Krishna conscious literature. We will create our prestige. That will create our prestige. And being cheap distribution, many people will learn our philosophy. So there's so many more, but we'll stop here. Any questions, comments on book distribution? Shankar Pandit is going out every day now from late morning to late evening now. He's made a vow to go out every day for the marathon, distributing at least 20-30 books a day at the airports. He's taking up Prabhupada's instructions, we should also go out. You can go out, you can distribute, or you can stand in a delight lobby over here and meet people as they come in and just encourage them to take a book. People will do it. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text Number 68. Ambarish Maharaj offended by Durvasa Muni. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sarvo Hridayam Mayam Sarunam Hridayam Tvaham Maranyet Te Na Chananti Naham Tebyo Manag Api. Everyone chant. This is a very important verse. In fact, this is one of the most important verses in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. So everyone chant nice, enthusiastically, and loud. Let them hear you're down on Clark Street. Okay? Ready? Sarvo Hridaye Mayam Sarunam Hridayam Tvaham Maranyate na jananti naham tebyo managapi. Come on, you can do better than that. Everybody chant nice and loud. Don't just sit there. Chant. Sarvo hridaye mayam sarunam hridayam tvaham maranyate na jananati naham tebyo managapi sarvo hridayam mayam sarunam hridayam tvaham maranyate na janati naham tebyo managapi. Sarvo hridayam mayam arunam hridayam tvaham arunam hridayam tvaham maranyate janati naham tebyo managapi. Sarvo hridayam mayam sarunam hridayam tvaham maranyate na jananti naham tebyo managapi. Sarvo hridayam mayam sarunam hridayam tvaham maranyate na jananti naham nebyo managapi. Sarvo hridaye mayam sarunam hridayam tvaham maranyate jananti naham tebyo managapi. Anyone else? Marari. Try it. You don't try it, you don't learn. You don't learn by not trying, you learn by trying. Try. Everyone should try. Sarva, the pure devotees. Hridayam, in the core of the heart. Mayam, all of me. Sarunam, of the pure devotees. Also. Hridayam, in the core of the heart. Tu, indeed. Aham, I am. Mat, anyat, anything else but me. Te, they. Na, not. Janati, no. Na, not. Aham, I. Tevya, they and them. Manak api, even by a little fraction. Please repeat. The pure devotees are always within the core of my heart. And I am always in the heart of my pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me. I do not know anything else but them. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Since Durvasa Muni wanted to chastise Maharaj Ambarish, it is to be understood that he wanted to give pain to the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the Lord says, Sarva Hridayam Mayam, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. The Lord's feelings are like those of a father who feels pain when his child is in pain. Therefore, offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee are serious. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has very strongly recommended that one not commit any offense at the lotus feet of a devotee. Such offenses are compared to a mad elephant, because when a mad elephant enters a garden, it causes devastation. Therefore, one should be extremely careful not to commit offenses at the lotus feet of a pure devotee. Actually, Maharaj Ambarish was not at all at fault. Durvasa Muni unnecessarily wanted to chastise him on flimsy grounds. Maharaj Ambarish wanted to complete the Ekadasi Purana as part of devotional service to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he drank a little water. But although Durvasa Muni was a great mystic Brahmana, he did not know what is what. That is the difference between a pure devotee and a so-called learned scholar of Vedic knowledge. Devotees, being always situated in the core of the Lord's heart, surely get all the instructions directly from the Lord, as confirmed by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 10:11. So who knows that verse, 10:11? Tesam? That's 10:10. 10:11. Very good. Out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. The devotee does not know anything not sanctioned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As it is said, Vaishnavera Krita Mudra Vigeha Na Bujhaya. Even the most learned or experienced person cannot understand the movements of a Vaishnava, a pure devotee. No one, therefore, should criticize a pure Vaishnava. A Vaishnava knows his own business. Whatever he does is precisely right, because he is always guided by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation again, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart, and I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutai Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swapadanti Kam Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. this verse is practically one of the most essential verses in the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam, because it deals directly with the heart of the Lord. It's very rarely that the Lord reveals his innermost heartfelt feelings. And this verse is a revelation of the Lord's most inner feelings of his heart, as he explains just how dear the pure devotees are to him. He explains it in such a way as to leave no doubt that there's nothing else that matters. He says that the pure devotees know only me, and I know only them. And this is the sum and substance of the relationship between the Lord and his devotee. The devotee is so dear to the Lord that the Lord will do anything to satisfy the devotee, because the devotee has given his life for the service of the Lord. Many times we found in reading the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, the beautiful narration of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as described by Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, as he explains Lord Chaitanya's feelings towards his devotees. He would say a number of occasions just how his devotees have purchased him by their love. He said about Vasudev Datta Thakur, the devotee who wanted to take the entire universe back to Godhead. He wanted to liberate everyone in the universe. And he thought that simply let me go to hell and I will suffer for all their accumulated sins, but take them all back. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport of that story that Jesus Christ, Lord Jesus Christ, is very magnanimous, but he only gave that concession to his followers. Vasudev Tata Thakur was even greater than Jesus Christ. Why? Because he didn't consider who was a follower or not. He just wanted to free everyone from their suffering. By his compassion for the fallen souls in this world, he wanted to do something to bring them away from their suffering. So he said, my dear Lord, you just give me all their sins and I will go to hell. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Vasudev Tata Thakur has purchased me. He can sell me anywhere. I am the property of Vasudev. Lord Chaitanya said that about Advaita Acharya. He said that about various other devotees. And the Lord's heart is like that, that one who has completely surrendered in pure love for the Lord. The Lord's sacrifice for that person is unlimited. And there was a story also how even the pure devotee has the same quality as the Lord. When the pure devotee sees one of his disciples acting in a pure way, he also becomes inclined to give everything to that devotee. There was a story in the beginning of our movement when Srila Prabhupada was in India. He was in Mayapur. And many of his godbrothers came to see him. And this was back in 1968, I believe. So we were just beginning the Mayapur project. There was nothing there. Just a little house. So some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers came to take lunch with him. And they were all there, many of them actually. And Prabhupada was sitting at the head, and everyone was sitting along his side on both sides. And Malati was serving him. She would serve Prabhupada his prasadam every day. She would cook for him and then she would bring him his plate. So they were there in Prabhupada's little hut. Maybe you've seen their little hut in Mayapur. You've seen the little place where Prabhupada began his movement. And Malati was, again, serving, but she was so embarrassed because she saw all his godbrothers there. And she, feeling that she was in a woman's body, how could she serve in front of all these exalted godbrothers? So she had the plate in her hand, and she was about to bring it to Prabhupada. But she got down on her hands and knees, and she took her sari and covered her head, and started to crawl like a little child, you know. She covered her head so no one would see her, and she was carrying the plate like this, just crawling up to give it to Prabhupada. So none of, being a woman, she was embarrassed. All her holy senior Vaishnavas were there. So Prabhupada, he noted that, and he said to all his godbrothers, she would give her life for me, and I would also give my life for her. Prabhupada said that in front of all his godbrothers. Malati tells that story many times. In the same way, we find here that the Lord, when he sees pure devotion and pure love, there's nothing else that can attract him, really. And that is the heart of the Lord. So if someone offends a devotee, any devotee, but of course if someone offends the pure devotee, and then their spiritual life is finished. It's like, as it says, it's like bringing an elephant into your garden. Whatever garden you may have is gone, crushed, smashed. The elephant just rips it all apart, stomps it to the ground. Whatever spiritual merits, gains you have done, it's gone, just by offending a pure devotee. It's called the mad elephant offense. It's considered the first offense against the chanting of the holy name, to blaspheme pure devotees who have dedicated their lives to the propagation of the holy names of the Lord. So Krishna takes these things very seriously. Even when the pure devotee is very kind, he forgives those who offend him. In fact, the pure devotee never takes offense. But Krishna does. Krishna does. Krishna doesn't overlook these things. There's a story of Srila Haridas Thakur. When Haridas Thakur was in Benapole, and he was preaching, chanting 300 names every day, one envious Khan, Ramachandra Khan, governor of the province of Benapole, he was envious of Haridas. So he wanted to break his austerity. He wanted to make Haridas fall down. He said, why is he so popular? Why, you know, people who are popular, they're envious of other people who are popular. If you do the same thing, if somebody's a dishwasher and somebody's a book distributor, there's not too much envy there. But if somebody's both a book distributor, then there's a little competition and envy between each other. When you have the same service, then there's always this envious mentality that can develop. I want to be better than that person. I want to be more noticed. Sometimes we even criticize or minimize others because of that. And we blaspheme or minimize their importance. So when you have the same activities of another person and you're striving to be good at it, and someone else is good at it, there's a tendency to be envious of that person. That is the nature of the material world. So Ramachandra Khan, he couldn't tolerate Haridas getting all this attention. He wanted the attention. So he called for all the prostitutes of Benapole. And he said, I have a plan. I will pay you greatly. You simply make Haridas fall down. So one of the more important, popular prostitutes, she came forward and she said, no problem. I will make you give me 3 days, 2 days, and I will make him fall down. So he said, all right, I'll send my men with you. She said, no, wait. Let me have a union with him tonight, and then tomorrow you can bring your men. So he agreed. She went. She came. She paid her obeisances to the Tulsi plant, and she made her proposition to Haridas. Haridas said, I surely will satisfy all your desires, but I have to chant my rounds. I have made a vow this month to chant 1 million rounds, and I have not completed my vow. So please, be patient, and surely I will satisfy all your desires. So she waited, he chanted, and the night was finished. And he said, I'm sorry, but it's too late. Please come back tomorrow. I apologize. So this went on, of course, and finally, to make these pastimes short, because I want to get to the point, is that ultimately he converted her, and ultimately she became a great Vaishnava. But Ramachandra Khan had committed a great offense to Haridas by trying to make him fall down, and the Lord noted that. A little later on, Lord Nityananda and his entourage came through the same province and came to the home of Ramachandra Khan. And his servants announced, Sri Nityananda is here. Ramachandra Khan said, then he can stay in the cow shed, in the Durga Mandapa. He shouldn't stay. He can live out there with the cows. So he offended Lord Nityananda by not greeting him. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Balaram himself. So Lord Nityananda, he simply laughed. He laughed. He laughed not in jest, he laughed in anger. He was angry, but he exhibited his anger by laughing. And then he went away. He said, this place is not even fit for dogs. He left. A little later on, the senior to the governor, the Chand Kazi, came. And the governor had owed him a little money. Not a very serious thing. But he decided to retaliate. So he cooked the cow, killed the cow, cooked the cow. And then he plundered all the possessions of Ramachandra Khan. And he plundered the entire village around. And he put the Khan, General Ramachandra Khan, in jail and took all his possessions, removed him from position. It is explained that not only did the Khan get punished, but everyone in the area got a reaction. It's explained that one commits an offense to a highly advanced pure devotee, or the Lord. Not only does that person suffer, but everyone in that area suffers. Heaven. These stories are brought out just to show just how serious Vaishnava aparadha is. It's a very serious thing. We are chanting our names, we're chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we're working very hard in our spiritual life, but we can ruin it all simply by criticizing or minimizing Vaishnavas. It's all finished. Whatever you work for can be killed in one moment simply by that moment, by that criticism. And it's a very dangerous thing. And Lord Chaitanya was very strong. Lord Chaitanya was very merciful. There's no greater mercy than Lord Chaitanya. But he would not tolerate Vaishnav aparadha. He was very strong. There's so many stories. There's one story during the Mahaprakash Leela when Lord Chaitanya was giving out benedictions to his devotees. And everyone was asking, oh, my Lord, please give love of God to my father. Please give love of God to my friends. And everyone was asking for benedictions for the others, not themselves. Someone said, please give love of God to your mother, Sachi Devi. He said, my mother, Sachi Devi, she is a vendor. Whoa. They said, your mother? She is like the mother of the universe. She is all our mother. She is so loving and kind to you. She is an offender. She has a committed offense against Advaita Acharya. And then he went on to explain the story that when Vishwaroop, his older brother, before he left to take sannyas, he was visiting the house of Advaitacharya and hearing from Advaitacharya regularly about the teachings of Lord Krishna and devotional service. So he was not interested in his schoolwork, he was not interested in getting married, he was interested simply in hearing the glories of the Lord from the mouth of Advaitacharya. So after some time, he left home and took sannyas. Never came back again. So that was her older son. So she only had Nimai left. So Nimai, Lord Chaitanya. And she was always afraid that he would do the same thing. So then Lord Chaitanya went and started hearing from Advaitacharya. So Sachi became really worried. So she said, this Advaitacharya, she didn't say it out loud, she said it in her mind. She said, this Advaita, he claims to be Advaita, but he is Dvaita. He claims to be non-dual, but actually, he's duplicious. She didn't even say it, she just thought it. So in one sense, she was feeling some little animosity or some really little differences with Advaitacharya. She didn't even say it. Lord Chaitanya considered that an offense. And when they asked, please give her love of God, he said, the only way she can get love of God is she will have to take the dust of the lotus feet of Advaitacharya on her head. So Advaitacharya was there to hear that. So was Sachi. Everyone was hearing it. And Advaitacharya said, put my foot dust on the head of the mother of the universe who has bore the son, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? This is impossible. So Advaitacharya would not allow her to take the dust. But then there was a kirtan later on. And during the kirtan, it became very ecstatic, and everyone was dancing in ecstasy. And Advaitacharya fainted. And while he was fainted, everyone said, okay, Mother Sachi, here's your chance. So she ran and grabbed some foot dust and put it on her head. And Lord Chaitanya made her go through that whole thing, although she really didn't commit any offense. He wanted to show that the world, that no matter who commits an offense, or appears to be offense, no matter how slight it may be, we get the wrath of the Lord. We get the disapproval of the Lord. Bhomasura. Who was Bhomasura? Bhomasura was Bhoma. Bhoma was born. One son came out called Bhoma. And that Bhoma was the son of Varahadev and Mother Bhumi. So when Bhoma started to hang around with some demons, ultimately Krishna killed him. He killed his own son. The Lord showed that he's not partial. Samoham samabhuteshu name dveshastrinapriya. Now I'm equal to anyone. I envy no one. But one who renders devotional service is in me and I am in them. So the Lord is equal to everyone. If one is his enemy and he does something to please the Lord gives him all praise and all facility. If one is a devotee and someone, he dissatisfies him, then the Lord deals with him accordingly. Of course, he's very careful with dealing with devotees, but he will not tolerate Vaishnav aparadha. It's very, very dangerous. It's the way. It says simply by committing Vaishnava aparadha, one's longevity of life, one's intelligence, one's bodily strength, one's memory, one's opulences are all finished. Very heavy statement. This was due to the offense that King Rahugana had against Jed Barton, when he committed offense against Jed Barton. So it's a very, very important verse here, because the Lord is giving the true revelation of his heart. We have to be very, very careful not to commit offenses against devotees, and especially the pure devotees, but any devotee, because we don't really know who is a pure devotee and who's not. We see the pure devotees as being something like the guru or someone else, but a person can come to Krishna consciousness because of many, many lifetimes of previous devotional service. They may be new in ISKCON, but they may very be well advanced in their spiritual life. They may be bhakta somebody, but they may be very spiritually elevated. So we don't really know. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya gave the formula, Trinadapi Sanichena Tayoriva Sahishnuna Amanina Mamanadena Kirtaniya Sadarehi. And one has to be very humble. One has to be very tolerant, very patient, and whether you're not asking anything for ourselves. This is the thing. When we expect things for ourselves, then we commit offense. If we don't expect anything for ourselves, there will be no offenses committed. If we're always willing to give and not ask anything, then there's no chance of committing offenses. But when we expect something, when we expect people to treat us a certain way, when we expect people to do what we want to do, or we expect people to act the way we want them to act, then very easy, it's an opportunity to commit offenses. So we have to be very careful. Always be in the mood of service, always be in the mood of trying to assist, and always be humble. Humility, tolerance, pridelessness, these are the qualities that make a devotee a devotee. So Maharaj Ambarish, he was such a powerful yogi. God, imagine he was able to travel throughout the universe. He could go to Brahmaloka, he could go to Shivaloka, he could even go to Vaikuntha. Such power he had. He was a mystic yogi. He was probably one of the most powerful mystic yogis ever. He was a plenary expansion of Lord Shiva. Yet, the Lord was, you know, he was ready to be devastated simply by his offense to Maharaj Ambarish. So that is, we see, no matter who you are, if you commit an offense to the Lord's devotees, there will be a reaction. He doesn't probably, it's not that if you're a sannyasi you can commit offenses, or if you're a brahmachari you can commit offenses. No one can commit offenses. Offenses are not allowed. So therefore we have to be very, very careful. Otherwise, the Lord becomes very, very strong. And we lose. What is the symptom of losing what is the symptom of being an offender? We lose the taste for chanting the holy names. That is how the indication is. If you feel yourself losing the attraction to chanting the holy names of the Lord, there's a good chance we're committing offenses. To develop the attraction for chanting, ultimately, is the benefit of the mercy of the Lord. To be attracted to hear the glories of the Lord, to be attracted to serve the Lord, to be attracted to chant. And when we commit offenses, we lose that attraction. When we lose that attraction, then our spiritual life gradually goes down. So therefore, one has to be very careful. Always be in a mood of serving the other devotees and not expecting anything for ourselves. If we're in the mood of service all the time, then there's no question of committing offenses. Okay, these are a few simple points. Any questions or comments? Anything? Yes, Murari. If you commit an offense, how do you undo it? There is a process. The process is explained in the scriptures that you must go to that person you have committed offense. You must humbly ask forgiveness with a desire to render service. You should not simply go and as a formality and do it, but one must seriously, within the core of their heart, ask for forgiveness. We generally are repentant because we know the reactions, but really, we don't want to cause anyone any inconvenience. So if we cause someone inconvenience, we should be sorry for that. That is proper human etiquette. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So if we said something wrong to someone, or if we criticized them unnecessarily, or we did something to disturb them, then we should go. We pay our obeisances, and we ask forgiveness, and we ask, how can I serve you? And generally the devotee is always, the devotee by nature is humble, so they always say, yes, you're forgiven, no problem. And then the Lord, see, Maharaj Ambarish, he didn't take any offense. And then the question, the answer to your question is the next verse. Here. No, maybe it's the next verse. Let's see. It's the next three, verse number 71. The Lord calls him, O best of the Brahmanas, you should therefore go immediately to King Ambarish, the son of Maharaj Nabaga. I wish you all good fortune. If you can satisfy Maharaj Ambarish, then there will be peace for you. So, one has to do that. It's not like the person says, well, I'm sorry, you know. The person doesn't take offense, so we think, well, he didn't take offense, so really I don't have to do anything. It's okay, I'm really sorry, but it's all over. No, you still have to go and apologize. You still have to go and ask forgiveness, and you have to go in a mood of offering service. When the Lord sees that, then you can get... But we can practice. The idea is if you hear criticism, or if you start finding yourself criticizing, stop yourself. Don't allow criticism to enter into your spiritual life. Always, if they say if you have a tendency to criticize, then criticize yourself. Because if you do that, that type of criticism will be constructive. Just imagine if we criticize ourselves, and then we can find improvement in our spiritual life. But we gain nothing by criticizing others. Now, in the case of the spiritual master, he can find some flaw in the disciple in order to rectify that, but he is not doing it in an envious way. But we, when we do it, we usually have an egoistic approach to the whole thing. So because of our false ego, when we, you know, if you see a fault in someone, rather than criticizing, try to help them. The idea is criticism is something that brings out the point. So if you're expressing criticism because something you don't like, then change it rather than criticize. Oh, he's in Maya. Well, if he's in Maya, help him. Don't criticize him. So we have to follow that process. There's one book. It's written by Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, who was Prabhupada's most senior godbrother. He just left this world 2 years ago, I believe, or was it last year? He was 102 years old. Great soul. He was the oldest of all the godbrothers that left. He just left last year, he was 102. He wrote one book called The Heart of Krishna. I have it upstairs. It's a beautiful book. explains all many stories about Vaishnava Parada, and also how to become free from Vaishnava Parada. This story is in that book. He narrates this story too. The story of Daksha and Shiva, the story of Haridas Thakur and the process, and the Brahmana who criticized him when Haridas gave the dissertation about important how the glories of chanting the holy name. So many stories that deal with Vaishnava Aparad are in that book. And then he gives the formula that ultimately you have to offer your humble and heartfelt apologies to that person and say, how can I serve you? It takes some humility to do that. Usually the ego won't allow you to do it. It kind of hurts the ego to be humble. Why should I be humble to that person? He's a rascal. That's what I'm thinking. It's just, it's too hard for the ego just to stop and be humble. Really? When we do it, it actually feels good, but to get to that point, it's very hard. Because the ego is just telling us, you're okay, you don't need to do that. You did something wrong, but you don't have to apologize. It's okay. And why should I humble myself before that guy anyway? I'm better than him. These are all reflections of the false ego. So Vaishnava humility is a very wonderful thing. It's a very wonderful thing. It's the essence of our Krishna consciousness. When you see it, it's so beautiful. Krishna immediately, when Krishna sees genuine humility, he immediately showers all mercy on that person, instantaneously. You want instant mercy, that's what we have to be. Trinadapi samichena tayurapi sahishtina. It's very hard to do because we're dealing with the false ego. And the false ego has so many defenses to keep itself. It's a very difficult thing. I'm preaching like this for myself because basically I can see I have none of these tendencies. My ego is just so huge. But that is our philosophy. Then we have to somehow or other become humble. And if you're humble, you never commit offenses. If you never criticize, you never commit offenses. If you're always nicely engaged in doing service for the devotees and for the Lord, you'll never commit offenses. As they say, idle mind is a devil's workshop. If you're not engaged in Krishna consciousness, your mind will find fault with so many things. Keep yourself engaged nicely in service, and then there's no time for finding fault. Okay. This is a very... I was honored to be... I wanted to do this verse today because it's such a most glorious verse. I can't really do it any honor. But this is such a beautiful verse. It's probably one of the most sweetest of all verses in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. The Lord is telling, he said, the pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. And I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. This is coming from the lotus lips of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where he gives his actual statement of how dear his devotees are. So, this is a verse to meditate on. We should meditate on this verse. And always be careful not to criticize. And there's some But my humble request is to give up criticism. It's impossible. It's difficult. It's almost impossible. The best way to do is just criticize yourself. If you always find fault in yourself, you can always make advancement in spiritual life. We should always be looking to our own faults, and then we can easily correct and make nice advancement in our spiritual life. Okay, anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Krishna saying.
Come, perfect brahmanas, perfect examples within society, based on our quality, not just based on our prachar with bad achar. No good. Or good achar and bad prachar, but good in both departments. So he wanted that. And in many, many ways, we've fallen short. Some of his followers have certainly been perfectly exemplary Vaishnavas with perfect character. But all too often, there's a shortfall. We were in our discussions at the temple for this meeting that we held. There were seven stated purposes that Prabhupada gave for forming the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And again and again and again, he indicated this point, it's like 7-8 times, that words training and education are there. So Prabhupada said that in so many places that one can, through training and education, one can become first class. One may not be so in that condition, but that quality can be brought out by proper association and training. And of course, ultimately through taking shelter of Krishna in the form of his holy name. But we find some devotees, many devotees are chanting, but their conduct is not what we would expect. So we have to come to that position. And Bhaktisiddhanta is indicating this quality of simplicity is a key to come to that kind of purity or character, Vaishnava quality that was wanted of us by our founder Acharya. So maybe, as I invited, you can speak something in pursuance of this, or some whatever inspires you on this topic, Prabhupada's story or something.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. Very interesting, very inspiring, very wonderful stories to illustrate the characters, qualities of one who is aspiring and is Krishna conscious. One little point that comes to mind is discussion between, or a statement by Sanatan Goswami to Srila Haridas Thakur, where he's praising Haridas Thakur to Haridas Thakur. And he's saying that some persons, they preach the message of God consciousness, but their behavior is not very good or exemplary. And others, they have very good behavior, but they don't preach. By this indication, he was saying that preaching is, of course, a very important and exemplary quality, and also behavior. But then he combined both of those in describing Srila Haridas Thakur, that He said, "You are, your behavior is exemplary, and you also are preaching the message of Krishna consciousness." Srila Prabhupada was once asked, "How do you tell who is a Vaishnava? Who is a devotee? What is the way of telling who is a devotee?" Prabhupada simply gave a very simple but very powerful answer. He said, "He's a perfect gentleman or a perfect gentle lady." In other words, one whose behavior is always impeccable. By behavior we also preach, because the qualities of a Vaishnava are the ornaments of a Vaishnava, and these qualities are the qualities of the soul. And of course, as Holiness Rupa Goswami has explained very nicely, there are various qualities, but some are more outstanding and some more glorious than others. Again, the quality of being completely dependent on Krishna is the quality that makes all other qualities glorious. There's various stories I was thinking of while Maharaj was speaking to illustrate some qualities of Vaishnava. And one of the qualities that is outstanding in its own right is complete surrender and obedience to the instructions of the Lord coming through the spiritual master. We saw that, of course, ultimately in the case of Bhagavad Gita with Arjuna, who didn't want to fight for various reasons. And ultimately, when he did accept Krishna's instructions, and then he became glorious as a true disciple of the Lord. And I was thinking of one story, which in one sense, I wish I knew all the details of this story, because it's such a sweet story, but I'll try to put it together. As one disciple or follower of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, whose name was Lochan Das Thakur, and he was a disciple of one of the most intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya named Narahari Sakar. Now, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would never like anyone to call him God. In fact, when anyone would call him God, he would block his ears and say, "No, I'm not God." And he would say, he would hold his ears and say, "Vishnu, Vishnu, Vishnu." Like, he wanted to show by example that no living entity in the material world should be considered as God. Although he was God, he wanted to show that example. But Narahari Sakar was so close to Lord Chaitanya that when he would fan the Lord with his chamara, he would sing the glories of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya would never stop him. He was special in that case. So Lochan Das Thakur was actually a disciple of Narahari. And when he was very, very young, he was married. He had a child marriage. He was more like 10 or 11 years old. His wife was like 7 or 8 sometimes. There's such cases like that the tradition, the culture is, even in that age, there's marriages given in order for a type of development of relationship that starts from the very age where people start to develop their interaction with the material world. So in order to solidify a very solid relationship, sometimes that's done, many times. But as he grew up, he left his child bride and he took to Krishna consciousness and devotional service. She was no more than 7 or 8 years old. And eventually he took shelter of Narahari Sakar and lived at the ashram of Narahari Sakar for many, many years and became a very, very strict brahmachari. And after some time, after being in the ashram for so many years, there was one man from his village who recognized him and also knew the family and his wife, his wife and his wife's parents. So he said to Narahari Sakari said, you know, this man is not a brahmachari. He's married. He has a wife. And he left her at a very young age. So really, it's not right. He's living here. So Narahari Sakari approached him and asked him. He said, yes, it's true. He told the truth. He said, well, therefore, you should go back and become a grihastha, live with your wife. You made the vow. So he had been away for at least 10 years or more. Longer. So he didn't even know where the village was or who his wife was or anything. So he was asked to go back to that area. So he was going back looking. And he came in that area and he saw one lady taking water from a well. So he asked about where he used to live. And she pointed to the house. And it happened to be his wife, but he didn't even know who that was. So he went in, and then he again saw his father-in-law and mother-in-law. And they had introduced him to his wife, who was, you know, the difference between 7 or 8 years old or 10 years later. So he accepted that, and so he went back, and he tried to live as a grihastha. But he had been so trained, and he was so renounced to the material world, that he couldn't accept it. He couldn't accept it. So it was a very strange relationship. He would just sit there and look at his wife and do nothing. And he wouldn't talk to her because the idea was in the training of the brahmachari is you don't talk to women. basically. You know. So it was very awkward for him. But his spiritual master told him that this was what he was supposed to do. And so he did it. But of course, he wasn't at all in his heart. He couldn't surrender to what it meant to be a good family person. Although he felt that this, you know, I have to do this because my spiritual master instructed me to do this. And Narahari Sakara was very determined, told him to go back. So he stayed there. But after some time, his wife, she came and told her parents, and eventually the word got back to Narahari Sakara that this man is just not a householder. It's too much in the mood of brahmachari. He doesn't know what to do with his wife. He just stands there looking at her. It was just like, it was like two strangers, you know. So finally, Narahari Sakara showed him a little mercy and told him, okay, you can come back. You're just not suitable for grihastha life. But here's a quality of complete obedience. I mean, he tried, but he couldn't. And he was glorified because of that acceptance of the idea that his spiritual master told him, therefore he must do it. So this is also an interesting quality. And it's an outstanding quality to accept the instructions of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. There's so many wonderful stories that illustrate the qualities of a Vaishnava and how those qualities actually make that person glorious. And by not following these qualities, or by showing qualities that are completely opposite of Vaishnava qualities, actually one loses all the mercy. There's another story in the life of Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya, one of the qualities of Ramanujacharya that he's so much preached amongst his followers is service to the Vaishnavas. The Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he started his movement, he took two qualities from each of the four sampradayas, two from the Ramanuja sampradaya, two from Madhva sampradaya, which ultimately became Madhva Gaudiya sampradaya, two from Vishnu Swami, and two from Rudra sampradaya. Oh, of course, that's Nimbarka. Now, in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, one of the qualities he took was the service to the Vaishnavas. Exclusive. That he considered, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered that service to the Vaishnavas was higher than service to the Lord. And Ramanujacharya also, that was his form, one of his foremost preaching. So one time when he was traveling to one of his areas where he had been preaching and making disciples, he was there overnight. So he was looking for, thinking of where can I stay. So he had two disciples in that town. One was very, very rich. His name was Yogesh. And there was another one that was very, very poor. So he sent two of his brahmacharis to the house of Yogesh, the very rich man, to inform them that Ramanujacharya, your spiritual master, will be coming to your house tonight. So please make all arrangements. So they went. And they knocked on the door, and Yogesh was so happy to see his godbrothers that he welcomed them in. And they explained that Ramanujacharya is here, and he wants to come to your house this evening. So make all arrangements. He became so happy, so enlivened that his spiritual master was coming. He didn't think of anything else. He just became so joyous. He started running around and making all arrangements. In the meantime, the two brahmacharis who had come a long way, he didn't even offer them a place to sit. He didn't offer them a glass of water. He more or less, after he heard they were coming, he pretty much ignored them. He was so happy that his spiritual master was coming. So they went back. They left. They came back to Ramanujacharya and they reported. They said, did you talk to him? Yes. What did he say? Oh, he was so happy that you were coming. How did he treat you? And they just stopped. And they thought, well, he was so happy to hear that you were coming that he really didn't pay us much attention. And Ramanujacharya says, I'm not going there. I'm not going. So he had this another disciple who was very, very poor. So poor that he hardly had enough clothes even to wear. In fact, his wife would not even come out of the house because she could not properly dress in public. And he would go out all day begging in order just to get enough food. So Ramanujacharya said, go and say, well, we are coming to that house tonight. So they came during the day, and the man was out. And his wife, she couldn't even greet the two brahmacharis because she was not able to come out in public. So they informed that Ramanujacharya is coming here and he wants a place to stay. Please make all preparations for prasad and everything. She was thinking, prasad? We don't even have anything in the house to eat, and my spiritual master, my husband's spiritual master, my spiritual master is coming. What to do? And she became so distressed, she didn't know what to do. And she thought, oh, there's one grocer, and there was this, she would sometimes go to this grocer to buy a little bit of rice or some atta or whatever she had, some little bit of rupees. So she had an idea. She went, and this grocer was a very, very lusty person. She was quite attractive, but she was very chaste. So he was always trying to make some proposal to her, but she was always refusing him. But then she figured, this is a wonderful opportunity, actually, to serve my spiritual master so nicely. So she went to the shop, and she explained that my spiritual master, Ramanujacharya, is coming, and please provide so many nice foodstuffs so I can cook a nice feast for him. I really want to honor him, treat him properly. And she said, I will satisfy all your desires. He was so happy. After so many times he tried to persuade her in so many different ways, she was completely uninterested. Now she's changed her mind. So he gave her, take whatever you want. So I gave her everything that she wanted, and she took all everything, came. She prepared this wonderful feast. And then her husband came home. And he said, what is all this? Where did you get all this? Our spiritual master, he's coming. And just at that time, Ramanuja came. Just after the husband arrived. So he was so happy. So they all just started to prepare, and they served Ramanujacharya this beautiful feast that she had prepared with so many nice arrangements. I don't want to get you hungry. I know it's prasad is coming in. But, so I'll just skip the details of the prasad. And then Ramanujacharya was so happy to see such arrangements and was cooked with such love and such devotion. And then he took prasadam along with some of his disciples who were with him. And then her husband called her in the back and said, where did she get all this? We don't have any money. How did you do all this? And she felt so embarrassed. She just hung her head in shame. She was so unhappy. She said, please don't be mad at me. But you know that grocer who has always been making advancement? I have agreed on the account that he would provide. And her husband became so ecstatic. He said, you are the perfection of a wife. You are willing to sacrifice your chastity just to please our spiritual master. Where is such a, or how is such a person as myself so fortunate to have a wife like you? He said, go ahead, go and serve him and fulfill the promise you had made. So Ramanujacharya started to suspect something was happening. So he went in there, and then the story came out. And he said, okay. So then there was some prasadam on the plate that was left. Wrapped it up, he said, here, you take him some remnants also. So he gave the remnants to her, and she went. And he was happy, the man, when she came. So she brought him, and he was thinking, ha-ha, she's actually gone. And then she said, well, I brought you some of the nice prasada remnants that you provided the nice food stuff for. So he took it. And when he took the remnants, Ramanuja Acharya, who is one of the greatest of all Acharyas ever to live, his mind became changed. His heart became somewhat pacified. And actually, he started to shed tears. He was very, very disturbed in mind that he even thought of asking her in such a way. He said, you are actually my mother. And he actually broke down and started to cry. And then she actually took him to meet Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya was very happy with him and bestowed his mercy upon him, gave him his blessings. But this story again illustrates that even at the sacrifice of one's self-interest in order to please the spiritual master, to please the Lord, one may do certain things in such cases. Of course, these are rare cases, but it shows that that quality is the quality that is the most outstanding. That one stops to think about only how to please the Lord, and how to please the Lord's devotees, making some personal sacrifice in order to do that. Of course, we don't recommend breaking principles, but these stories are rare occasions which just show the unalloyed devotion that one can exhibit in such cases, that even go beyond what we consider to be acceptable behavior. Hare Krishna. I don't know, Maharaj, if that fits in with the theme of your particular story, but would Balati like to take, eradicate some of my offenses?
Of course, for us, we see all good qualities in the exemplary character of Srila Prabhupada. Just like Krishna exhibits all good qualities, although Govinda can exhibit a few qualities, only Krishna exhibits all good qualities. The Srila Prabhupada, as the mandated servant of Lord Chaitanya's mission for this period of time, he was also reflecting all the qualities. I was reading a couple of nights ago how Krishna was wonderfully dressed and he had fabulous jewels and gems, but the jewels and gems were not adorning Krishna. Rather, by being worn by Krishna, the jewels and gems were being adorned and they were looking very beautiful. the Srila Prabhupada was adorned by all good qualities. And these good qualities in of themselves were meaningless, except that Srila Prabhupada was such a perfect and surrendered servitor to Lord Krishna. And many times we would experience, sometimes in the beginning, we would experience these qualities without even realizing what that experience was. For example, the humility that Srila Prabhupada exhibited in the early part of our movement in his dealings with his immature and uneducated American and European disciples. I'm thinking of many instances. One instance early on in San Francisco, within the first few weeks when he came there in 1967, January, and many people had been helping us get our small storefront that was to become a temple, getting it together, donating paint, donating their time. And there was one couple, but it was not a man and one couple, it was a male and male couple. And they invited Srila Prabhupada to come to their apartment, and they wanted to feed him, and they wanted to feed the devotees. So we went, Prabhupada accepted his invitation because they had really given a lot to the temple and were continuing to do so. And he went there, and they made like this kind of like a buffet. So there was not individual plate made up for Srila Prabhupada, and everybody was just eating out of the containers. And there was like, which I really remember, this container of thick cream, and another container of brown sugar, and another container of strawberries. So the idea was you dip the strawberries in the cream and then in the sugar, and then you eat it. So this was the one, this was what Prabhupada chose to eat. There were some other made cook things, and he avoided that. But everybody was dipping their strawberries in the same cream and the same sugar and eating, you know, like that. And we didn't even know that this was grossly offensive. And Prabhupada never even said anything. He simply appreciated the offering of these two young men. And we saw by his example that we should also appreciate, you know, the offerings of these two young men. And we were never even at that point told that actually this was not the proper way to treat the spiritual master. So this was Srila Prabhupada's genuine humility and his genuine surrender to Krishna and to Lord Chaitanya to make the perfect example for spreading Lord Chaitanya's mission. On one occasion, in India, when we first went there with the first group of us, actually Srila Prabhupada is really brave to take us to India after such a short time, because we were just barely past the mismatched stalking stage, and you know, we were still into the bright everything, you know, if you were Grihastri, you wore bright yellow no matter what, and you know, so many things. And so when we went to this one town where we were really welcomed, like, the, you know, as if we really were great devotees. Of course, Srila Prabhupada was a great devotee, and it was he who they were honoring. But they were also extending the same honors towards us because they saw us as serving this great personality. And very mercifully, they were overlooking so many of our defects. You know, we'd be invited to their homes to eat, and we would latch onto one particular dish that we would really like, and we'd just eat them out of the, you know, and they would like, they would never say, we don't have any more. They would actually, you know, if I found this out later, they would go in the kitchen and really quickly, you know, prepare more, no matter what it was, they would do that, you know. So, and we were unaware, kind of ignorant of this. And they would always be giving us gifts. And because I had a daughter to carry with me, you know, I always had made a kind of a mental idea before I left America to come to England that since I had this baby, I would never have more than I could carry. And that meant the baby in one arm and whatever in the other. So people started giving us gifts. So at one point, I was being offered in Prabhupada's presence some cloth, and I was like, I don't have any room for this. So, you know, it wasn't any humility. It wasn't that I was renounced. It was just practical. I just didn't have any more space. So I thanked the person. I said, no, thank you, that I didn't need it. And Prabhupada jumped up. And he simultaneously apologized for my poor behavior in not accepting the gift. And then he looked at me and he said, you are Brahmin, you must accept.
And that was very, you know, it was a very sobering instruction, because I didn't feel like a Brahmin, I just mostly felt like a fool. But I could understand that Prabhupada wanted us to act on that platform, whether or not we were on that platform. And it reminded me of the incident where Garga Muni had left the room without making obeisances, and Prabhupada told the devotee, he said, you should make your obeisances. And Garga Muni said, well, I will when I feel like it. And Prabhupada said, no, you do it, because then you will feel like it. So in the same way, he expected us to act like Brahmanas, whether or not we were. But his qualities shown far above and beyond whatever any qualities that any of us had developed then. And with all due respect to my glorious black brothers, you know, because some of them have developed really outstanding qualities, but nobody has been able to come near the perfection of Srila Prabhupada that's offered and exhibited. And that's only befitting. You know, we're not in competition just with Srila Prabhupada. We're simply trying to be there as particles of dust in the shadow of his lotus feet. One time in Sri Mayapur, when I was cooking for Srila Prabhupada, his godbrothers came. And it was expected, even by myself, that I certainly wouldn't cook on that day because the godbrothers were coming. But I heard Prabhupada calling me, and he just started telling me, as he did every day, what he wanted that day, so I understood I would be cooking after all. And the godbrothers came, and they were in, this is when Prabhupada lived in a small kutir, the brick kutir with the thatched roof that you first see when you enter Mayapur. So I put the curtain aside to enter that room. Prabhupada was sitting at the far end, and on each side there was three and four of his godbrothers. It's not such a big room, but, and there was just a little tiny bulb, not a lot of light. But somehow, Srila Prabhupada was vibrantly glowing. And it was this, and these godbrothers, and they were very venerable Vaishnavas, older gentlemen, you know, his godbrothers. So I saw Srila Prabhupada as the center and a setting in a beautiful ring. And he was this vibrant diamond. And when you have a diamond outside of the setting, the diamond is nice, but it really is enhanced when you put it in a setting, either platinum or gold, you know, then it enhances the beauty of the diamond. So the godbrothers were enhancing the beauty of Srila Prabhupada. They were the setting. And I could see there's, you know, even with my fallen eyes, it's no comparison. You can never see Srila Prabhupada like anyone else.
Should we have some discussion, or is it late? We should have a hard time. Where's our host?
Yeah,